From the Independent Times newsroom, this is an audio edition of our latest report, Independent Voters, a bipartisan win for the American dream, published on March 13th, 2026, narrated for you to take the news on the go. Every December, millions of American families gather around their televisions to watch an annual tradition in our country, the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life. Directed by Frank Capra, it is a story of hope and a reminder that no man is a failure who has friends. Interestingly, despite five Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture, it didn't win a single Oscar in 1946. It wasn't until decades later, through repeated television broadcasts, that it became a cultural landmark. One of the film's most iconic moments takes place in the sun-drenched Bailey Park, where the entire community has turned out to celebrate a family moving into the newest home built by the Bailey Building and Loan. In the fictional town of Bedford Falls, George Bailey, played by Jimmy Stewart, ran the Bailey Building and Loan, a community cooperative where neighbors pooled their savings to provide low-interest mortgages for one another. George dedicated his life to this model, believing that owning a home provided the dignity every American deserved. This stood in contrast to the local big bank, Potter's Trust. Mr. Potter, the town's wealthiest figure, operated a traditional, strictly profit-driven institution. He viewed housing primarily as an investment vehicle for himself. Potter preferred to keep residents in Potter's Field, a collection of rental properties where he maintained total control as a landlord. To Potter, the townspeople were often seen as rent payers first and neighbors second, whereas George Bailey saw them as the very foundation of a stable town. In Bailey Park, the dream of ownership wins. George stands by as his wife Mary, played by Donna Reed, offers the traditional housewarming gifts. Bread, she says softly, that this house may never know hunger. Salt, she adds, that life may always have flavor. George follows with a bottle of wine and says warmly, and wine, that joy and prosperity may reign forever, before grinning at the new homeowners and inviting everyone inside with their iconic line, enter the Martini Castle. It's a scene of quiet triumph, a front door that belongs to a family, not a corporate portfolio. For most of the 20th century, single-family homes stayed in the hands of ordinary families and small landlords. Post-World War II, the GI Bill, suburban boom, and community lenders like George Bailey's made homeownership explode, turning renters into owners and building stable neighborhoods. That model held strong until the 2008 financial crisis shattered it. The housing bubble burst, millions lost homes to foreclosure, and vacant properties flooded the market. Traditional banks tightened lending standards dramatically, making it harder for everyday buyers, especially first-time buyers with limited credit or savings, to qualify for mortgages. Meanwhile, giant investment firms spotted an opportunity in the wreckage. Beginning around 2011, private equity firms like Blackstone launched entities such as Invitation Homes to buy foreclosed houses in bulk and market them as updated rentals in desirable neighborhoods. Other major firms followed suit, snapping up foreclosed homes en masse. What changed? The 2008 crisis left behind many cheap, vacant homes, and low interest rates made it easy for big investors to borrow and buy in bulk. At the same time, long-standing problems such as strict local zoning rules and not-in-my-backyard or NIMBY opposition meant that too few new homes were being built to meet demand. Well, after 2020, ultra-low rates during the pandemic, people moving to warmer Sunbelt areas for remote work and flexibility during lockdowns, and widespread supply chain disruptions for building materials pushed everything into overdrive. Investors could swoop in with all-cash offers that outbid regular families and handle large-scale purchases. The impact is profound. Fewer homes enter the for-sale market, driving up prices and pushing more families into long-term renting rather than building equity through ownership. In hot local markets like Atlanta, Phoenix, Tampa, Charlotte, Dallas, Houston, and Jacksonville, where institutional buying has been heaviest, the share of single-family rentals has just reached 15 to 25% in some areas, intensifying competition for first-time homebuyers. For generations, homeownership has been at the heart of the American dream. the idea that hard work and responsibility should lead to stability, dignity, and a place to call your own. For the vast majority of Americans, home is the largest investment they will ever make. It is the number one way Americans build wealth and fund retirement, providing a paid-off asset and equity that serves as a critical safety net in later years. When families are forced to remain permanent renters, they lose the primary engine for long-term financial security. The fallout today is stark. We face a national shortage of millions of single-family homes, and in the post-war 1950s boom, buying a typical home cost about 2 to 3 years of a family's average income. Today, it often takes 5 to 7 years of income to afford one. Housing today now eats up 40% or more of many households' monthly pay compared to 20 to 30% historically. Compounding this, the median age of first-time homebuyers has risen sharply from around 30 in earlier decades to 40 in recent years, as affordability barriers delay or block younger families from entering the market. Well, recent polls show how deeply Americans feel this loss. 85% of Americans believe homeownership is still part of the American dream, yet 72% say it's a bad time to buy a house. Majorities across income levels doubt they'll ever afford the home they want, with 71% of aspiring homeowners delaying major life decisions like marriage, kids, careers, or even pet ownership until they can buy. Well, families now compete not against one Mr. Potter, but against portfolios with billions in capital, delaying or denying the dignity and wealth building George Bailey championed. In January 2026, President Trump signed an executive order titled Stopping Wall Street from Competing with Main Street Homebuyers. It directs federal agencies to stop using government-backed programs to help large institutional investors buy single-family homes. Vice President J.D. Vance has also tied the housing crisis to illegal immigration, stating that flooding the country has driven up prices. While economists agree that immigration increases demand, most note that chronic zoning-induced undersupply remains the primary cause. Well, here's a rare bipartisan response. By an overwhelming 89-10 vote, the 21st Century Road to Housing Act passed, aiming to limit large corporate investors while protecting small investors and families. This targeted approach offers reassurance that reforms can promote homeownership without harming everyday Americans. In their floor remarks following the vote, each highlighted why this Martini Castle moment is so vital for the country. Well, Republican Senator Tim Scott from South Carolina says this, quote, "Today, the average age of a first-time homebuyer is 40. That age is too old. We can do now what a legislative body did then, create opportunities, restore hope, and let young people experience for the first time the American dream, the dream of home ownership." End quote. Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren said this, quote, "This bill takes a good first step to rein in corporate landlords that are squeezing families out of home ownership. Homes should belong to families, not just be one more investment vehicle for Wall Street." End quote. And this is why bipartisan support matters so much. An 89-10 margin in today's polarized Washington is extraordinary. It shows both parties recognize the housing crisis transcends ideology, hitting working and middle-class families hardest. This pragmatic breakthrough prioritizes results over partisanship. Well, there is a dissenting view that does ask the question, can restrictions hurt supply? Well, despite the overwhelming margin, the vote wasn't unanimous. Senator Brian Schatz of Hawaii, a progressive usually at the forefront of housing advocacy, was the lone Democrat to vote no. His concern? That the bill might inadvertently choke off the very supply the country needs. On the Senate floor, Schatz called the 350 home cap bananas and warned that the 7-year forced sale rule for many build-to-rent projects could amount to a ban on rental housing. Well, under this rule, large investors who build new rental communities are required to sell those homes to individual buyers within 7 years. While that sounds good for buyers, Schatz argues it, quote, screws up the rental market. Most housing developments are financed based on the ability to collect rent for decades. Forcing a sale in just 7 years could make these projects impossible to fund, stopping new construction before it even starts. Schatz says, quote, "I don't think people are clocking how bad this is going to be on the supply side," end quote. His concern is that by making it harder for institutional capital to manage long-term rentals, we might discourage developers from starting new projects in the first place. It's a fair point from a policymaker who wants more homes overall, highlighting the tension between stopping modern potters and ensuring we don't accidentally stop the Baileys from building. Critics of the bill agree, noting that institutional investors own less than 3% of all single-family rentals nationwide. They argue that by vilifying the big players, Congress is reshuffling ownership of existing homes rather than doing the hard work of building the millions of new homes we actually need. So what does this bill actually do? At its core, it puts a hard stop on the biggest corporate players buying up even more single-family homes, specifically any for-profit company or investor that already has direct or indirect control over 350 or more single-family homes can't purchase any additional single-family homes in the future. The bill defines control broadly. It aggregates ownership across subsidiaries, affiliates, and related entities, so it's tough to game the system by spinning up new shell companies. There are some practical exceptions. Investors can still buy homes that need major renovations, say 15% or more of the value to fix them up, or build new communities specifically for renting. But even in those cases, most of those properties have to be sold to individual homebuyers within 7 years, with renters getting a right of first refusal and a 30-day first look period. No one's forcing sales of homes they already owned before the law kicks in. And to make sure people follow the rules, violations carry real teeth. Civil penalties up to $1 million per violation, or three times the purchase price, whichever is greater. A viral post on X pointed out something fair. The 350 home threshold is pretty high, so only the largest institutional players get hit right away. Smaller or mid-size investors can keep growing their portfolios without this restriction. That said, the bill's aggregation rules count controlled entities toward the total cap, making it hard to dodge by creating new LLCs or subsidiaries. Legal experts confirm that's intentional. Here's the bigger catch. There's no requirement for big investors to sell off the roughly 450,000 single-family homes they already own nationwide. Those stay in corporate hands. It also doesn't address the root causes, such as sky-high interest rates or the skyrocketing cost of building materials and labor. Wages have been growing at about 3 to 4% a year lately, but home prices have outpaced that for years now, leaving a real structural gap between what most Americans earn and what they can actually afford. So yes, this is meaningful progress, especially the bipartisan push to level the field, but it's not a total fix. The House still has to weigh in, and that's where refinements could happen. So here's why independent voters should care. This bill is a rare example of what independents actually want to see, a pragmatic cross-aisle fix that levels the playing field without big government overreach or partisan scoring. It targets only the massive corporate buyers, think hedge funds and private equity giants with thousands of homes in their portfolios. Small landlords, mom-and-pop investors, and everyday families are completely free to keep buying and owning private homes. No one's coming after them, and no new taxes are hitting regular Americans. The real payoff? Putting more homes back on the market for families and taking some of the downward pressure off from Wall Street cash should help bring prices down and make it easier for a lot of people, maybe your kids, maybe you, to afford a starter home and actually start building real wealth over time. And in this divided Washington, that overwhelming 89-10 support shows something important. Housing isn't a left-right issue at all. It's just basic economic reality, stable neighborhoods, retirement security, and that same dignity George Bailey championed when he helped families like the Martinis get their own front door. Polls confirm independents are fed up with gridlock, but open to bipartisan wins like this. A 2025 Independent Center survey found affordability and inflation topping concerns for 67% of registered voters, with independents especially likely to prioritize practical fixes. The National Association of Realtors 2026 voter poll reveals broad cross-party support, including independent support for bipartisan policies to boost supply and help families buy. 85% of Americans still see homeownership as essential to the American dream. But only 17% think now is a good time to buy. So here's a call to action. Independents don't want party loyalty. They want results that restore opportunity. Use your outsized influence now while the House shapes the final bill. The bill now heads to the House. If you value practical fixes over partisanship, this bill is worth championing. Take a moment and send a message to your representative, and send a message to democracy.io. Independent voters wield real influence. Demand Congress finish the job. Homes for people, not portfolios. Thanks for listening. For more news built for independence, head to indtimes.news and follow us on social media at indtimesnews. Your voice matters.